The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Honey, the online shopping platform that helps consumers save time and money, is building a Boulder office and looking for software engineers to join the team. Find out more at joinhoney.com/careers. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. We have a unique startup and tech community here on the edge of the Rockies, and we want you to know about it. The Boulder Tech Podcast features conversations with leaders, thinkers, and influencers, sharing their views on what's happening in Boulder's rapidly evolving tech scene. These interviews were recorded during the 9th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind, anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. Our guest for episode 2 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is software architect Stan James. He's the senior engineer at Origin Protocol, and he lends his perspective on the evolution of the tech and startup community in Boulder, the present and future of blockchain, and why we should be excited about it. So how long have you been in Boulder?
That's kind of a tricky question. I joke that this is my third tour of duty in Boulder. I was here for my undergrad back in the early 90s, studying here at CU. And then after CU, I stuck around and worked for a while. And then I left, went to grad school in Europe, and was in New York for a while, and then came back to Boulder in the early 2000s and founded my first company here. So that was my second time in Boulder. And then I left again and was in San Francisco and Berlin for a while. And now I'm back again. So this is my third time in Boulder. So cumulatively, probably going on like 14, 13 years in Boulder.
But that's spread out over the last almost
25
years.
Or more, yeah.
How has the tech scene evolved over that time?
Yeah, it's changed a lot. And also my awareness of it has changed. When I was an undergraduate here at CU in the 90s, I don't think I was just ignorant, but there wasn't much, like the thought of starting a company or joining a startup wasn't really in the air. Looking back, I can see I did join a startup, but it wasn't sort of billed as such. It was just a new company. And that was sort of for the dot-com boom era. When I returned again in 2006 to start Legit Networks, I distinctly remember being in the coffee shop, which is now The Cup. It was something different back then. And I had just arrived and was so excited about startup. And I overheard someone at the other table saying something about raising money and their prototype. And I literally got up and went to their table and was like, "You have a startup? So do I. Like, we should be friends." Because it was so unusual for me to hear that kind of talk in coffee shops. And of course, today, I feel like that's the only thing I hear over here in right. coffee shops. So that's a definite sea change.
Are you still in touch with that person that you met that day?
I do not think I actually succeeded in becoming friends with them. Or I just forgot who they were. I probably eventually did become friends with them. Back then, the tech scene was a lot smaller, and you sort of knew everyone who was doing whatever in Boulder. Now, it's just there's so much going on. I don't think anyone has a full grasp of what's happening.
And now your major gig is with Origin Protocol, which is a cryptocurrency?
No, not. It's, okay. Yeah. It's actually a major misconception that when you say the word crypto, you have to follow it with currency. There's a lot of, I think even the most interesting stuff happening in the crypto space is not on the currency side. It's just this decentralized, basically you have a database that no one owns and that just lives out there. And of course, one of the most important things that you need a totally secure distributed database for is keeping track of who has how much money. And that was kind of like the first killer app of blockchain. But now it turns out there's lots of other things you can do besides just keeping track of who has how much money. And we're on that side of things.
Give us a couple examples of what you can do with crypto other than currency.
Well, to pull an example, which is near to our hearts at Origin Protocol, let's say you have a used bicycle that you want to sell. You just want to find a good buyer, someone who wants to buy the kind of bike that you have for sale. In today's world, you have to choose which company are you going to share that fact with that you have a bicycle for sale? You can put it on Craigslist. You can put it on eBay. You can probably still list it on the Daily Camera newspaper here. You could maybe go on Amazon. In other countries, you might use Kijiji. All of these are relatively giant companies, and you have to pick which one you're going to share this fact with that you have a bicycle for sale. In this new blockchain world, there is a place where you could put that fact that you don't have to pick which company is going to own it. And that's what we're going to enable at Origin Protocol. You can just put onto the blockchain, hey, I've got a bike for sale. These are the stats, blah, blah, blah. And any number of applications can surface, you know, can show that fact. People can look directly on the blockchain or whatever. And then they can find and contact you. And you never had to pick which giant company is going to serve as middleman for that transaction. Mm-hmm. And that is the type of thing that we can do at Origin.
Where is the blockchain now on the sort of growth timeline?
It's definitely still the early days. This is probably an overused analogy, but it's kind of like when I was really excited about the internet in, say, 1993 or so. And I would try to explain to my parents or friends, like, this thing's amazing. And, you know, you show them, it's like, look, I just like FTP'd a file from France. And they're just looking at like green characters on the screen. And they're like, this is totally unimpressive. And it wasn't until the web browser came along where you started to get some, you could communicate that excitement. But even then, like the old versions of AOL and like Genie and these ancient networks, they were all better than the internet. And like, you know, they were owned by General Electric and Sears and stuff. And they had a better offering, but they were owned by one company. And the internet won out over time because no one owned it. And it just kept getting better and better. And so to answer your question, blockchain is in those early days where it's hard to see, you have to squint to really see how this is going to be better.
Right. It's still not going to impress your parents.
Exactly. They have no idea what I'm doing. I've tried a lot of analogies, but they get a hint. Yeah.
Is there a goal in the blockchain sector for like, this thing will be the tipping point where blockchain will become mainstream and receive massive mainstream adoption, and we just need to get to that point? Or is what that trigger point is still completely unknown and everyone's just kind of marching forward regardless? Yeah. You know, I don't know really anything about blockchain other than what I'm learning in this conversation right now.
Okay.
And so it just, you know, my impression of it is that it's very, you know, it's still early days, definitely kind of a Wild West sort of thing with a lot of geeks and people with money playing around, but it's not clear to me yet why I should care or use it. And what do you see as being the tipping point where it sort of clicks and it's like, oh, okay, now I get it.
I don't know what that's going to be. And not to overuse that analogy, it wasn't clear in the early days of the web either what was going to be the thing that got people involved. And if you look back, I'm not even sure what it was. You know, it was like just like really ugly homepages on GeoCities, or was it the fact that you could look up your band's homepage? Was it, I guess in hindsight, Google was probably the first killer app that let you find all the other cool stuff that was out there that you couldn't find before. But it's not clear what the Google of the blockchain is going to be, or what's the first, you know, thing that really will get people's attention.
Or right now we're sort of in Netscape land and we're waiting to get to Google.
Yeah, it's not clear. And of course, I'm biased. I think that what we're doing, Origin Protocol, has a pretty decent shot of being one of, if not the first thing, which cracks into the mass market, simply because, you know, someone who lists their home on Airbnb or someone who wants to sell that bicycle, they don't want to pay a middleman, you know, 20% or something. And so hosts on Airbnb or Uber drivers, when they have a choice of like, oh, I can list my service on Airbnb or I can list it on Origin, Airbnb is going to take a 25% cut. Origin is going to take zero. Money talks, and they'll go with the option that, say, makes them more money. So those people are motivated to make the switch. But who knows? CryptoKitties has been the most successful blockchain thing so far, which is selling collectible online cats. And no one predicted that coming.
Okay, so Airbnb or whoever is going to take their percentage. Origin takes 0%. So how does Origin monetize?
Well, I have to preface all of these statements with, I am not the money guy in Origin. I am blockchain engineer. So take all of this with a massive grain of crypto salt. Mm-hmm. But the default path that most blockchain projects are taking and that we are on is that we will have our own token, which is kind of like a cryptocurrency, that you will use when you want to create a listing. You'll pay X amount of Origin token to create that listing. Similarly, maybe if you want to leave a review or you want to like dispute something, you'll have to pay little amounts of this token. But as the demand for Origin services goes up, so it's, you know, the first year, maybe only 100 people know about the service or 1,000, whatever, and then the next year it's 1 million, and then the next year it's 10 million. Like any scarcity thing, the cost of that token will go up. And Origin and Origin employees, we own early amounts of that token, and that's basically how we get paid. I like to say that this is... it's actually kind of a more humane way to fund a company or a project, in that the rules about how that token, like how much it costs and all that works, is sort of baked into these smart contracts at the beginning. We talk a lot at Origin about not giving ourselves too much power, because then people won't trust us. So what that means is, let's say 5 years from now, Origin Protocol is like dominating all the online listings and Airbnb is worried and all that. We literally cannot go back and say, oh, now we want 10%. It's technologically impossible for us to leverage the fact that we are now popular in the same way that Airbnb has. Like, they keep every year, they like charge a little bit more and they're always trying to extract maximum value. Our token only goes up in value the more people want it, but we cannot arbitrarily suddenly decide that we're going to take 20% of this and 30% of that.
So the rates are sort of set.
The value of our token goes up the more people want it, mm-hmm. but we cannot change the rules other than just trying to make more people want it. So we are incentivized just to make it the best protocol that we can, that more companies and more people use it.
Who says that you can't change the rules?
This is where we get into kind of the heart of the crypto world. Is the blockchain provides this, everyone's running the same code, and it only works because everyone's running the same code. And not to get too much into the math and such, but, you know, Satoshi, the guy that invented Bitcoin, yeah, he wrote the code for Bitcoin that tens of thousands, if not more, of computers are running around the world. He cannot now change that. He gets 10% of all Bitcoin transactions. He mm-hmm. literally cannot do that. It's just impossible. And in the same way, Origin cannot change the code of our contracts to like one day start exercising or taking a cut.
The way the whole thing is engineered, basically, there's this layer of rules baked into it, as you said.
Yeah, and everyone's following the same rules. If you try to like run by different rules, then you get isolated and cut out of the network.
Complete transparency.
Exactly. And that's kind of why this having currencies as the first big thing to happen in the crypto world is in some way a really nice proof of concept, or like the fact that people trust millions of dollars to this protocol, to the crypto blockchain, gives you a ton of assurance that it's okay to list your $200 bicycle. Like, if it's good enough for the $1 million thing, you can trust us with listing your bicycle, and then we're not going to try to extract a cut.
So I can see this as being a great benefit for buyers and sellers. It cuts out the middleman. If it were to grow the way everyone is hoping it's going to grow and become adopted by the mainstream, that's going to cut out a lot of middlemen. It means like going to put Airbnb out of business and Craigslist, et cetera. Or how is that going to affect the landscape of things?
It certainly could in some kind of perfect scenario. AOL is a good example. They, in the early 90s, had their own network, and they were competing with the internet. They wanted you to dial into their service, not the internet. And when they saw they were losing, they added a little link so you could get to the internet from within AOL. And then for a while, we lived in this hybrid world of, you know, you could do some things were on AOL proper and some things were on the internet. And then eventually they just gave in and were an internet provider. It's conceivable to me, not that I'm a prophet of these things, that in a perfect origin world, if everything goes great, you know, maybe Airbnb is one of many applications that you can use to access the blockchain to find origin listings. But now they have to compete. Like, they can't lock up all the inventory, that they're the only place you can find out what's for rent. That is the world that we would like to see.
Do you have any idea of a time frame?
That's where you have to make a big distinction between the coins or the money side and the actual applications being built on blockchain. It turns out that building your own cryptocurrency is actually really easy. And then all you have to do is try to convince a lot of suckers that your coin is worth something, and you might be able to fleece some ignorant people. I think that was the explosion we saw last year. Not saying that they were all scams, but the industry was drunk on how easy it was to make your own cryptocurrency. That era, thankfully, seems to have at least be calming down. And we are now entering this era of, let's actually build the next generation of things. Mm-hmm. And that means real engineering, and it takes time to make a real application, to make a real protocol. And that is what we're doing at Origin, and, you know, hundreds of other crypto projects are now getting to the hard work of actually building a real thing. And that's where we are now. And beyond, like, CryptoKitties, I don't think any of those projects are really ready for prime time. I suspect a year from now is when we're going to start seeing some real blooming of some of these projects come to fruition, Origin included, where now it's fully functional, the kinks are worked out, maybe not quite ready for your mom or grandma to use yet, but your kind of average tech user can work with it and start having a profitable time. So yeah, I think right now I see us in a bit of a, not hibernation, but now we're just hunkering down and building. Now is the phase. Like, we got the mortgage, we got the money to build the house. Now we just got to freaking build the house. And that takes time. And we'll have the housewarming party in a little while.
Okay, that's a good, I get that analogy. I like that. Are there a lot of blockchain companies, engineers, people working on the blockchain here in Boulder? Is there a big community of that?
I've been surprised. We're finding more and more, actually. You know, Gitcoin is here, Zcash, which is, after all the stuff I said about cryptocurrencies, Zcash is in a class of its own with its own really innovative cryptography, which makes, you know, total anonymity. There's a few down in Denver. Shapeshift is down there. So yeah, there's a budding community here. And in a way, the crypto community in Boulder now feels a little bit like the startup community felt back in 2006, where everyone kind of knows everyone, it's highly supportive, we're all just trying to raise awareness of what we're doing and how cool it is. We're all helping each other out with, like, oh, has anyone done this type of work before? Oh, I know someone, you know, I can help you out. I really love the community feel in the early, and we're all super excited because we know we're at the beginning of something really, really early, and we all believe in its potential and know how huge it can be. And we're just eager to get it built so people can see, like, in our heads, it's clear. And now we got to just, like, build it for real so other people can see how amazing this vision for the future is.
You've come and gone a couple of times from Boulder, as you said. Do you see yourself being here for a while, or you think there's going to be another leaving?
Hard to say. I'm here for a while now. I think it's a little harder as you get older to pack up and leave so easily. And it is coming and going. I do appreciate it more now. I think I see it with new eyes. What I just took for granted when I was just here for college, and that, you know, when I needed to just take a de-stress hike, I can just do it and go for a walk and be there. Mm-hmm. And the sense of community that comes with a smaller place, you know more of what's going on. And this, like, incredible balance of, like, small town feel combined with like the most cutting edge brains in the world are here, along with great quality of life. And yeah, it's pretty amazing.
And how do you feel about the balance between that small town feel and a lot of people coming in, a lot of people with money, and sort of the demographic is definitely, I think, changing in Boulder over the last several years. And there are areas where there's definitely some friction between the people who have been here for a long time and this, you know, new economy, new scene coming in. How do you see the future of that being negotiated?
Yeah, it's tough. I'll be honest, I miss a lot of the old Boulder, you know, a lot more people wearing patchouli, just doing their drum circle thing, or, you know, people that worked a couple shifts at the bar to support their skiing habit. And I hate that those people are, you know, either getting priced out or whatever, or just not as creative and funky of a place that it used to be. I definitely miss that. I like the level of talent that we're acquiring now. As I said before, just brilliant people that are here. I guess there were some before, but there's like even more showing up. When I moved to New York in like 2008, you know, people like, oh, Boulder, you know, like they thought it was kind of like a Hawaii place where you just went to like retire and turn your brain off. And we've definitely proven that that's not the case. But having lived in San Francisco for a while, I also can see that the same process that happened out there is happening here. And in some sense, you can't fight it, and you just got to make the most of it and try to preserve the good parts. And I hope that maybe in the same way that Boulder had the foresight in the past to preserve the open space around here, to preserve that kind of natural resource, that we'll find ways to preserve the funkiness and the creativity and the art scene and the, you know, hippy dippy stuff and all that mix, you know, like the beatniks and all, like all that great stuff that made Boulder what it was. I hope you can find a way to keep that spirit here. I don't want us to turn into like, you know, a ton of wealthy tech people and the people that bus in to service coffee.
And do you think that that view is shared by a large part of the tech community? Not that it's a monolithic thing, but do you think that the tech community shares that appreciation for what Boulder has been and wants to preserve some of that? Or do you think people are just like, whatever, man, I'm here now, I'm making my money, it's beautiful, and I don't care who's serving me my coffee?
I don't know. It's hard to speak for the whole tech community. Of the people I interact with, it's certainly a top of mind conversation thing. And those things are valued. I don't think we have a great plan of attack of how to implement that yet. I hope someone will kind of take the charge on that, I suppose.
Anything else you'd like to say about blockchain or what you're doing or Boulder or Startup Week or anything else?
I would encourage anyone who's interested in the startup world in general to educate yourself on blockchain, because it is, I think, a force to be reckoned with. It's, as an engineer and as a startup guy, I haven't been this excited about a new technology maybe since the web, or at least since kind of the early web 2 social media days. Like, it feels like that big of a titanic shift. So it's like, ignore it at your own peril. You know, it's like, you know, being a newspaper publisher in 95 and ignoring the web, or being running like a blog in 2005 and ignoring Twitter and Facebook. Like, you need to know what's happening out there. And to our last conversation, say that doesn't mean understanding trading cryptocurrencies, and that doesn't mean understanding how block confirmation works or whatever, like the lowest levels. It's understanding the kinds of things you can do with blockchain at a higher level. So I guess per Startup Week, that would just be my advice to people, like, at least get your basic 101 understanding down.
And where would you suggest people go to get that 101?
As I was saying that, I was like, I haven't found that there was, I think the best one, actually, there was an article, I want to say it was in the New York Times, maybe it was the Atlantic, by Stephen Johnson, the author who did like Everything That's Bad Is Good For You and other titles. but he did a long piece article about blockchain and the whole picture of what companies like Origin and other companies that are moving beyond the currency side. And it was a very, I mean, he's a great author. So it was a really well-written article. I think that would be the place to start.
Stan James, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
That was Stan James, senior blockchain engineer at Origin. Find them at originprotocol.com. Find Stan at wanderingstan.com. Episode number 2 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week brand tech track sponsor, name.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week platinum sponsors Matter, Zayo, Google, and Boulder Engineering Studio. We're also presented by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio and to KGNU Community Radio for the recording gear. Our intro music is by Ecodec, that's E-C-C-O-D-E-K. Hear more at ecodec.com. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, and comments are welcome. Reach me at joel@thevibrarian.co. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.